In the frozen land of Nador, they were forced to eat Robin's zombie takeout, and there was much rejoicing.
And the Lord did grin, and the people did feast on the lambs and sloths and carps, anchovies and orangutans and breakfast cereals and fruit bats and zombie takeouts and...
Skip a bit, brother. What's up? Welcome to episode 300 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto, or is this Sparta?
Yeah, I actually thought about that for a while, like just completely swerving everybody and actually doing 300.
It was an easy joke, but...
Yeah. Anyway, before we get to this week's movie, we actually have some news that you found for a change.
Yes. According to many sources, you can see Variety, The Guardian, but this actually goes back a couple weeks. Disney is planning on making a Don Quixote franchise, not just a film. They are planning a franchise.
Well, first off, I'm surprised they've never done that, particularly with Man of La Mancha being so popular. But how do you do a franchise out of one book, for starters?
Well, they say they want to make it have a Pirates of the Caribbean vibe to it.
Yeah, a movie based on a ride.
That's an exact quote in Variety, actually. Uh-huh. Of course, the problem with this, I mean, not that this is going to be any good anyway.
Particularly apropos this week.
But one of our heroes, of course, has been devoting... Oh! 20-something years to making his cherished The Man Who Killed Don Quixote movie.
Yeah.
And he's actually in the middle of filming. Hopefully he does not drag his feet on this because...
Well, it's been 20 years. I mean...
It has been. He's got, you know, of course, a huge cast in his, Driver... I think they're saying Robert Duvall. There's Palin's in it, of course.
Duvall in a Gilliam movie. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Adam Driver, particularly interesting, especially if he becomes part of the stable. Because I see Driver fitting into Gilliam's universe. I'm assuming Driver is taking the Johnny Depp role.
So, yeah, the last rumor was that it's been delayed by trying to get money together to put it out. So who knows?
So Disney is in a race with Terry Gilliam.
Yeah. And you know they're just going to crank the shit out. By the time he gets one of his out, they may have the whole trilogy and people are going to be bored to death of Don Quixote. So very sad news, really, if you think about it.
All right. So on to this week's movie. Again, apropos of that news, which is from 1975, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary. Sponsored by strange women lying in ponds distributing swords. It's worth a shot.
And also brought to you by the Holy Hand Grenade. When you absolutely positively have to kill every last motherfucking rabbit in the room. Except no substitutes.
And hope that the animator has a fatal heart attack.
Just look at the bone structure, man. All right, so... We have the Grail legend here. I mean, this is really a very basic plot that they hung. Well,
this isn't really much of a plot.
Well, they took the story of Arthur having this quest bestowed upon him. Well, you begin with him trying to round up, assemble his knights of the round table. And in the process, he is given this quest to find the Holy Grail. By God himself. I mean, of course it was a good idea. And they find it pretty much right away. Except they leave where they believe it is and split up to search for it on their own, which never made any sense.
No.
Only filler. To, of course, yeah, to rejoin each other and come back in the end and to the same place, even though now it's surrounded by a body of water. And hilarity ensues.
Two were killed, a third's arrested, and yeah.
Well, yes, that's a different that's a different thing altogether.
And all of that was really just a skeleton to hang a series of medieval-themed sketches, effectively.
Right.
It's a Monty Python movie.
Yes, and I mean, it just so works, though.
Oh, yeah.
It's so simple.
That's not a criticism. By the way, were the opening credits always kind of tilted and shaky?
What do you mean?
They're kind of at an angle and they fidget a little bit here and there. I don't know if it was my copy. It didn't look like a cam version. I found it on YouTube.
Not that I noticed. Okay. The whole thing before watching this, like, is this going to live up? Because there was one time, I'm trying to remember, I bought like a real fancy DVD version that even had like a cell from the film. Mm-hmm. And I was like, is this going to live up? And of course, it's different when you have watched this a million times and can see the jokes coming.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't think the kids get it.
But so much of it still works even when you know it's coming.
Ah, yeah.
Like the subtitles and the whole sacked gag, which I still love.
Credits. And that was when I first started this. Like, wow, I forgot just how good even the opening credits alone are.
Yeah.
Just sign Richard M. Nixon. And just, I mean.
Could have done without the strobing during the llama gag.
How could we do without the strobing in the llama gag? The thing is, the people that sacked the people who sacked the people who were sacked.
Right. Were responsible for the strobing and there was no one left to sack
right.
them.
You're right. There were, yeah.
And even the coconut is still funny.
Right. I mean, and then when you start noticing more coconut gags and swallow gags throughout the movie, I mean, I can't remember how many times I'd watched this before I figured out Sir Guinevere was tying a swallow to a coconut when you first see him introduced.
I actually never caught that. Still, yes. I'm going to have to go back and look.
Yes. The first time we were introduced to Guinevere, he's tying a bird to a coconut and let it go to see if it can carry the fucking coconut.
Nice.
The gag is implanted throughout the whole movie.
Mm-hmm. And even just the name of Gilliam's character, which we only hear once, Patsy.
Well, everybody plays multiple characters.
Well, but the name of that particular character, we only hear it once, but it kills me every time.
My favorite character name, of course, is the man from scene 24.
Well, yeah. And of course, Sir not appearing in this movie.
Oh, yeah. The many Dungeons and Dragons game had that joke used.
Incidentally, that was Gilliam's son in the photo. Pellion's son.
Characters would always be Sir not appearing in this adventure. Mm,
yeah.
That was Gilliam's son. That's funny.
Oh, it was Palin, so I misspoke.
Oh, Palin's.
By the way, funds earned by Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon went toward this movie.
Really?
The band were such big fans of Flying Circus that they actually would halt recording sessions to watch it.
I mean, I know George Harrison, he funded like all of Life of Brian just about. Yeah.
Well, it was his production company, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he like mortgaged his house for, I mean, he like really believed, he believed that Python were kind of carrying the torch of the Beatles, which looking back on it, that was so ridiculous because not because they were different genres of entertainment and writing, but because by the time the Beatles broke up, Python was pretty much almost past its, zenith as a show.
Right.
And you know, Cleese left the show in, like, what, 2 years after that? But here they come back together to do this after Fawlty Towers.
And a lot of it is even still relevant, what, 40 years later?
Well, how many times have we seen the the Strange Women 2016, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That whole scene, though, with Dennis the Peasant is so relevant today.
The help of the oppressed. I mean, yeah.
Which I always got a kick out of because he says repressed instead of oppressed. Turns out that's actually a correct use of the word.
Hmm.
Yeah, he says help up, I'm being repressed.
I'd always thought he said oppressed. Yeah. Repressed, though, huh?
And something I caught this time that I'd never noticed before is how cool Arthur's choreography is when he fights the Black Knight. Because he moves very little. But it makes him look like such a badass because he just knows exactly where he's going to hit.
Well, the holding the sword out, even though his strike would, like, obviously miss him anyway.
Yeah.
Just to, like, meet his sword.
Mm-hmm. But it was just very simply choreographed because, you know, it's Graham Chapman. But it looked so cool.
Let's see. I can come up with 5 things that I had never noticed before. Even though I really don't know how many times I've seen this movie over the 30-something years of watching it.
It had been a long time for me. It's probably been 15, 20 years since I've seen it. So, you know, I don't know what I've not noticed before, to be honest.
So, first on my list, a scene of Guinevere and Arthur begins with, you know, the two were talking about something.
You mean Bedivere, right?
Oh, yeah, Bedivere. He starts with, "That, sir, is how we know the earth to be banana-shaped."
I don't remember that yet.
The other things go around the famous historian.
Mm-hmm. And I loved his appearance because it was just starting to get a little monotonous. And then the historian shows up.
So he appears to have had blood on him before he was attacked, number one. Number two, he's obviously still breathing after he was killed.
Yeah.
And the third thing about that, the movie crew was obviously framed because the murderer was on horseback.
True.
The movie crew had no horses.
Mm-hmm.
It's the coconuts. Only horse in the entire fucking film. So the crew of Holy Grail was framed for this murder.
Mm. Incidentally, the knights were originally supposed to ride real horses.
Of course.
But there wasn't enough money.
I was even thinking, like, you know how much money they probably fucking saved by not by that gag? And to have that gag throughout the entire movie, too, I mean, just brilliant.
Yeah. So they just decided to steal this old, you know, Foley trick from, you know, old movies and use coconuts.
And the fifth thing is, Lancelot gets considerably shorter during the Enchanter Tim scene, and he's wearing a helmet.
Speaking of Tim, I found out something when I was researching that made that scene, his initial scene, so much funnier.
Which?
The name Tim happened because Cleese forgot the character's original name and ad-libbed it. That's why there's the pause and he says, "Tim?"
I just thought that was funny because it's this big dramatic pause and you're expecting, you know, Merlin or whatever, you know, Gandalf or something very, you know, mysterious. And just the Tim?
Cleese forgot the name and just threw that out there. That's why he kind of says it as a question.
That's the other thing. You have to wonder how much of this was ad-libbed.
Mm-hmm. Probably a lot of it.
Yeah, lines like, "Enchant your armor." It's just sort of thing that Graham Chapman was just known for pulling from out of nowhere, but yeah, within the scene perfectly.
And the whole "bet you're gay" gag had to be ad-libbed too.
Oh yeah.
And they're leaving Castle Anthrax.
Yes.
And I loved the names at Castle Anthrax. I don't remember a single one of them, but they were hilarious at the time.
Zoot's
the only one I can remember. What was it?
Dingo,
yes. That I'm sure Carol Cleveland was just ad-libbing probably.
So, yeah, we covered this off-air before this, but you need to see, of course, the added scene.
Mm-hmm.
They did, like, for a special anniversary edition, I'm trying to remember, maybe about 10 years ago?
Okay, yeah, sounds about right.
And, yeah, it's this line of characters throughout the movie all arguing who has the better scene.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the lines, of course, was the man from C24 saying, well, my seed's better. At least mine isn't a bunch of pussy jokes strung together.
Nice. Another thing I noticed this time, Prince Herbert never actually sings.
No.
He gets so close, like 5 times, and never sings a note.
I was trying to figure out who the fuck that was playing him, because it looks so different from any of them. But according to IMDb, that's Jones.
What?
Yes, IMDb claims that's Terry Jones playing Prince Herbert.
Well, Jones was in another scene that I didn't quite recognize him. It took me a while. He's one of the three-headed knights, and he looks a lot different there, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe just makeup and angles in the wig makes him look sufficiently different.
You know, he's kind of a bigger guy than that.
Yeah, true.
Assume.
Yeah.
So I was like, why would they have the prince being played by a non-Python? And of course, it's...
Well, there were other larger roles, well, semi-large roles played by non-Pythons, like Herbert's father.
There was Palin.
Was it Palin?
Huge tracts of land.
Oh, yeah, that was Palin.
The best the line, of course, was, now, everybody, let's not get hung up on who killed who.
Robin's minstrel was also, Tim Innes?
Neil Innes.
It's Neil Innes, okay.
You know, he did like a lot of the music and stuff.
Right, he co-wrote a lot of the music with Idol.
Yeah. And of course he was the page that was crushed by the large wooden rabbit.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the rabbit, when I first saw that scene and they got to the look at the bones man, I immediately flashed back.
Not that rabbit.
Oh, yeah, the rabbit. I forgot about that rabbit.
The large wooden rabbit.
Oh, right. But the rabbit in the cave, I immediately flashed back to you saying that about the pizza at OCC. Made it 10 times funnier. Because I had completely forgotten about that until hearing that particular line. Speaking of that rabbit, in the scene where the knights were combating the killer rabbit, a real white rabbit was used. It was dyed with what was assumed to be a washable red coloring liquid
in
the shots after the battle.
Oh, no.
You know where this is going. When filming Wrapped, the rabbit's owner was dismayed to learn that the dye could not be rinsed off. Gilliam described in an audio commentary that the owner of the rabbit was present, and shooting was abruptly halted while the cast desperately attempted to clean the rabbit before the owner found out. An unsuccessful attempt. He also stated that he thought that had they been more experienced in filmmaking, the crew would have purchased a rabbit. Otherwise, the rabbit was unharmed, other than being stained. But I can just picture them trying to clean it. Oh, rolling back as such, Lancelot's raid on the Swamp Castle must have taken up the entire stunt budget. Because he's swinging around and, you know, you've got a bunch of extras getting killed.
In that perfect idiom.
Is that the right use of idiom?
I really think so.
I always thought of that as a verbal thing.
Right. But he uses it like 6 times.
Now, I have to bring the science in, especially given this swallow gag. The airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow is roughly 11 meters per second, or 24 miles per hour, beating its wings 7 to 8, 9 times per second rather than 43. It's true, a 5-ounce bird cannot carry a 1-pound coconut, but furthermore, no swallow weighs 5 ounces. The barn swallow, which is what most English people mean when they say swallow, weighs only 20 grams, or 2/3 of an ounce. So yeah, there's no way it could carry a coconut.
Well, suppose two of them grabbed it together. You know, perhaps an African swallow could carry.
Perhaps. I don't know what the size difference is. I don't even know if there are African swallows.
They're non-migratory, apparently.
Apparently.
I can't believe we just practically redid that scene.
Yeah.
Why?
And this isn't exactly a nitpick. It's more of an appreciation for a subtle gag that I've never thought about before. Joseph of Arimathea lived in a cave in Britain. I never connected that before, but I just loved the idea of, you know, him being in a cave in Britain. And the animator having a heart attack, still my favorite part of the movie.
You know what? Watching this week, right after seeing Grindhouse, they took a lot from this in that Planet of Terror.
Oh yeah, any comedy has borrowed from Python.
But like that whole intermission music.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, granted, it was like a different, you know, vibe to it, but just they were going for the same.
The idea of effect. Going for an intermission, yeah.
And of course, the interrupting the film, you know, like it's not quite the same scale of when they were crossing the bridge and they just broke to the intermission.
Right, right.
Where they resolve most of the, where they answer most of the questions and they have a love scene cut out.
And you know, that's a running thing in Python too. They did, you know, you've now reached the middle of the film in Meaning Life.
Yeah. But just what really takes this movie, it's, I mean, of course, it's just insane what was put together, but more than anything is the execution of this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The delivery of lines, you know, like, well, I've got a note. Like, where they're cute, like, you got my note. It's just like, well, you know, I got a note.
Incidentally, there were numerous disagreements between Gilliam and Jones, who co-directed. Gilliam was more focused on the technical aspects, Jones was more focused on the comedy. After this, it was agreed that Jones would direct future Python movies. So they decided to focus more on the comedy than the technical stuff. And Cleese said in the audio commentary that he was irritated that the scene in Castle Anthrax was more technical than comedic. There was more focus on the technical side. I never noticed a decrease in comedy, personally.
I think that's what makes this more special than the other movies. There's so much that's delivered just totally deadpan.
Yeah.
There's so much here that is just delivered completely straight-laced. I like Cleese's turn in that scene where he's doing the rescue from, you know, psychopath to, yeah. Oh my, did I? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, he stabbed in the head. Oh, how is he? You know, it's that subtlety that's just fucking brilliant. I mean,
but that's so not down people... to the directing. That's down to just Cleese knowing his job. You know, Cleese did that a million times.
Well, true that in that though, but in the Castle Anthrax scene, think of what would have happened if they were over the top with that.
Yeah, true, like, true.
They were already over the top with that, as right. It was.
On but the page, it was over the top.
Right. But if they had a director who was focusing on over the top and just trying to push gags out.
True.
It probably wouldn't have been as good. It would have been, as the man from Scene 24 says, a scene of pussy jokes.
Well, yeah.
Which, of course, that was Gilliam. That was the man from Scene 24.
Oh, God, it was? Okay. That explains it. But the Castle Anthrax scene, all of the jokes are on the page.
Yeah.
That really is a scene where you just hit your line, hit your mark and say your line. And it works.
Right. Well, for Python, of course, you have the question of whether do you want to wink to the audience?
Yeah, yeah.
Or do you want to, you know, pull ahead and go, you know, just go with it?
And that scene works so much better without the wink.
Yes. I can't imagine that scene if they're like, hey, you know, what about this or that?
Yeah.
You know, the seriousness of them looking at the wounds, but, you know, they're not really looking at the wounds.
Right.
Until that tension breaks and makes them bolt.
And fortunately, it was Palin, who is a brilliant straight man.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody else in the troupe could have played Galahad. You know, only Palin could have pulled off the pure.
But if you really look at this movie, it's Chapman that's the straight man, which is so
weird. That's true. Yeah.
I mean, it's a little confusing why they made Chapman Arthur, you know, when usually his strong suit is, you know, being the crazy zany person.
Yeah, he normally would have played Bedivere. It would have been a more fitting role.
Maybe.
Or all of Cleese's roles. They kind of switched roles in this one.
They kind of did.
Because Cleese pulled off all of, in addition to Lancelot, all of the zany characters.
really, Palin, I mean, that knights who say nee.
Yeah, true.
That would not have worked with anybody else, mm-hmm. I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, Palin has just did this so crazy dramatic reading of, like, you know, just the way he accented things. Like, you'll never be seen alive.
And I just realized how much of that did Emo Phillips rip off.
Maybe.
That's totally an Emo Phillips delivery. But by the time they got back to the Knights, by the time they changed their name, I had forgotten why they needed the help from the Knights to begin with. I actually had to roll it back and, like, what was the initial scene? Why did they need the Knights?
They need to pass.
Yeah, they need to get through to get to the cave.
Yeah, it was another, like, gatekeeper sort of deal. Yeah. But, I mean, the scene where they get back is the best. Oh, my God. That could be one of the best of the whole fucking film, if you think about it. I mean, first of all, he's saying, we're no longer the Knights who say, mm-hmm. nee. But all the other Knights are, like, kind of like, nee, and shushing each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're still stuck on the old thing. And just the whole, you know, another, you know, shrubbery, but stacked right here so they can have a path between the other guys. Like, a path. And then the whole dramatic reading of, you must cut down the largest tree in the forest with a herring. And of course, he produces the fish.
Mm-hmm. And the word that they were afraid of.
Yes. Which they say so many times mm-hmm. in the first scene.
Of course.
Suffice it to say, he says it every line. Yeah.
And they actually spell it out on, I think it's IMDb. It's obvious if you watch the scene, what the word is.
Yeah.
But I just got a kick that they spelled it out. And just going to the ending, not the ending, but toward the end, when the French Taunter shows up again.
Right.
Loved that. I'd forgotten that part. There was also another great callback. Just before the three-headed knight, we run into Dennis again. The peasant. They just, you know, they cross paths with him briefly. That was just such a great callback to, you know, a few scenes earlier. And then, of course, the French Taunter comes back at the end.
And, of course, it has to be in a circle. You know, the whole plot has to be circular.
And I guess Arthur isn't a king anymore at that point because he does have shit on him.
I wondered that. And, you know, this is the first time I'd ever kind of thought of that. That he had shit on him. Mm-hmm. So is that, you know, was that the message that, you know?
That was just a callback to Palin's or an Idol's line earlier. You know, he must be a king because he doesn't have shit on him. Throwaway line,
right. Yeah. Yeah. How do you know? Oh, he hasn't got shit on him.
And, you know, at the end, he's got shit on him.
Oh, he's kind of going to jail.
Oh, yeah.
Unless they get good legal representation.
I don't think Arthur had legal representation.
Well, like I said, I think they were framed if you looked at the...
Oh, yeah, yeah, they were definitely framed.
Yeah.
And then the actual ending. Only Python would have the balls to do this.
The ending, you know, the final scene, I don't know, as a writer, that influenced me beyond anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just so... It's so real, mm-hmm. think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Life isn't about the big climactic clash,
right?
You know, fulfilling the quest, finding the grail, and you know, happily ever after. It's about getting cut off just as you're about to go, you know, find the, you know, the grail and achieve the quest,
or just as you're about to kick somebody out of the castle and take the grail,
to get cut off and thrown in jail.
Yeah. Although I was talking about the actual ending.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Only Python would have had the balls to do this. More than 2.5 minutes of cheesy organ music and a blank screen in place of the closing credits.
Well, because you keep thinking something's going to come back.
Mm, yeah.
You keep thinking they're going to add. I mean, even now, of course, I watched all the way through just to make sure they didn't add something.
I watched the whole thing just out of respect. I listened to all the organ music. Because they did that.
Yeah.
I knew there wasn't anything after it. This was way before anybody did post-credit scenes.
Well, the fact that they do all those credits up front, they take advantage of.
Yeah, exactly.
So they don't have to do credits at the end. I don't know if anybody had ever thought of that before, to tell you the truth.
Of course, that abrupt ending was because they ran out of money.
Oh, yeah.
They stopped the battle because they couldn't afford the battle. They didn't necessarily run out of money, but they didn't have the budget for the big battle scene.
How else would it end, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the point that Arthur never came back from the Grail Quest.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And it just wouldn't be a Python ending if he won.
Right.
Oh, one last bit of trivia. For the Japanese release, Holy Grail is translated to Holy Sake Cup. On the sequels and remakes?
There better not be.
In 2005, the film spawned a Tony Award-winning Broadway musical called Spamalot. Yeah. Written primarily by Idol, the show has more of an overarching plot and leaves out certain portions of the movie due to difficulties in rendering certain effects on stage, of course. However, the same gags are there for the majority of the show. I'm counting that as a sequel. Or is it a remake? It's a remake.
It's using a different genre.
So it's a stage adaptation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that had some good people in it, too. That had, like, David Hyde Pierce.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I think it had Tim Curry for a bit, didn't it?
It's been a surprisingly successful show, because Python is still a little underground.
Yeah, well...
And Python was never largely mainstream, but there are a lot of mainstream people in Spamalot.
That surprises me, because... I mean, I've watched it since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, really, probably younger than I should have been watching it, but it played to me even when I was like 4 or 5 years old.
Okay, I have a bit of a confession. I had heard the name, because I have older siblings who are old enough to have, you know, watched when they were popular, but I had never seen it until you mentioned it.
Really?
After we met, you started talking about Python, and then I went and looked for it.
Wow.
I think I must have rented a couple of movies or something.
If I look back at my life and have no other accomplishments, yeah. Fuck, I've introduced people to Python.
Yeah,
I mean...
I'm sure I'm not the only one.
You're the only one that confessed.
Perhaps.
But yeah, they let me watch this shit when I was like 4 or 5 years old.
Wow. But Python is like Doctor Who. It's insanely popular to a certain segment. And anybody outside of that segment is kind of not that familiar with it. They've heard of it, but they don't really know it.
But going to school, it was something that, like, most people, like, recited the shit, like, line for line.
Hmm. I guess we hung out with different circles. I hung out with musicians in high school.
Yeah, I think even in high school, too. Yeah, I even thought, probably not as much in high school as in college. There were definitely more people in college that were, like, you know...
Oh, yeah. Once we got to college, of course, you know, it was all over the place.
I don't like spam, you know what I mean? Just
on the brains?
On the brains. Wonder what we're giving this.
it's Python. It's damn near perfect. I got to go 5.
I think this is perfection. I think really, even seeing this so many times, sometimes I'm laughing just because I remember the first time I saw it. You know, like the bridge scene and stuff.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to still find new little...
yeah.
The earth to be banana-shaped. I mean, it's just kind of stuck in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 5, obviously.
The only slight little... I wouldn't even call it a complaint. The reason I say almost perfect is that I've seen it so many times and I know the joke so well that it does at times drag a bit.
Yeah.
But only because I know the joke so well.
Right. I mean, there's nothing like that first time where you see the bridge scene and, like, the thing gets flipped. And, you know, that leaves the question. Are there people who have never seen this movie?
I was actually going to say that. I'd forgotten. If you're listening and you haven't seen this movie, you need to see it. In fact, well, I think it's a little late to say it now, but, you know, see it before listening to this episode, if you can, obviously. You've already listened to the episode. I was going to mention this up front, but I'd forgotten.
I don't know.
I think anybody in our audience has heard it.
Who've never seen it? Yeah, that was the first question I kind of had even before I started the movie. Like, are there people who have never seen it? Because, yeah, when my sister-in-law she said she'd never seen this, I was like, what? I don't think she still has, because I think she wound up falling asleep.
Uh-huh.
Because it was like late at night when we put it on.
Well, and to some people, and I've heard this, it's kind of like Star Wars where it's so popular that they don't want to see it.
I don't understand that, though.
You know, there are some people who have heard so much about Star Wars that they're resistant to seeing it because it's so popular. It's a hipster thing.
That's really weird, though.
And I've heard people say the same thing about Python. Because it gets quoted so much and it's so popular, they hear so much about it, they don't bother with it.
That's really weird, though. I mean, if you hear a lot about a movie and you see, like, parts of it that, you know, are interesting, I'm not sure why one would not see it.
Like I said, it's a hipster sort of thing, you know. Anyway, so what have we learned?
I should really visit Sweden this year, see the lovely lakes.
And I learned that I have been slightly misquoting this movie for decades.
I just read about this, that people believe we're in a parallel universe. That if you, the theory is if you miss, it's the, like the Mandela effect, I think it's called. That they believe that if you've been misquoting a movie for so long, it's not because you misheard it in pop culture or somebody else referencing it. It's because we're in a parallel universe.
I think it's more like the play it again, Sam, Luke, I am your father thing.
That's what they say. That's included. If you believed that it was Luke, I am your father, instead of no, I am your father, you are from a parallel universe.
I think it just slipped my mind and just transmogrified in my head. You know, it's African or European to me. It's not the whole line in the movie. You know, and there was another one too that I always get wrong. You know, you're gay, aren't you? Bet you're gay. There are certain lines that have just transmogrified in my head because it's been ages since I've seen it.
That line is said under so much action at the same time and women screaming, and me.
I've mentioned that to people, like, you know, 20 years ago when I first saw the movie, who didn't believe me that the line was in there. I've actually argued with people. Yes, he says it. Because for whatever reason, the first time I saw the movie, that line just jumped out at me.
So I hope the your ending audio is what an eccentric performance. Because that's our 300th episode.
It's something else, but I'll dig that up. I'll throw that in. All right, so until next time, and we'll be revealing Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. Continuing with the Star Trek movies, we'll be wrapping them up, at least of the original cast, by the end of the year.
Yeah.
We're going to be packing these last two in pretty tightly. This is supposedly, from everything I've heard, the best of the Star Trek movies.
Really? Generations? No, Undiscovered Country.
Yeah. And it's actually the only one we've seen together in a theater.
Really? We never... Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
This was the only one, because I saw Generations on home video.
Yeah.
I think I saw Generations, like, well after the fact, too. But we saw this one with Darren when it was in theaters.
That's right. And Greg and just the whole, you know, the whole cast, the whole crew. So, man, episode 300, huh? Mm-hmm.
We have done this 300 times.
Yeah.
That just kind of struck me earlier today.
I've been thinking about that for a while now. We've done this 300 times.
Well, this is the 300th, but, you know, before this.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've done more movies since we've done, like, double and triple.
Yeah, of course. And I was looking through the list, and I actually remember all but, like, maybe a handful of them. There's maybe four or five that left no impression.
I mean, you realize we're pretty close to a point where someone could either listen to a TAS or a Zombie Takeout episode one day out of the year.
20 more episodes. Oh, no, 23. More episodes, and we're there.
That's just crazy to think. Mm-hmm. But I thank you guys all for listening.
And whenever we get to that 23 episode sometime next year, I'm going to ballpark it next spring. I would love to hear from someone who is willing to take up that challenge.
A Scott and Uncle John adventure.
When we get to episode 323, you know, try one episode of, you know, either a year. You know, you'll get through TAS pretty quickly in a couple of months.
Although TAS had some very long episodes, even by our standards.
Earlier in the month, when we had those couple of weeks off, I posted Labyrinth of Greed on the Facebook page.
That's what I thought that one was.
Mm-hmm. It's the best TAS episode, I think. And I just posted it to Mark, you know, 11 years of podcasting. And it still holds up. I mean, the audio sucks, and you know, the editing is bad because I didn't know what I was doing back then. But the jokes are still solid, at least for the most part. I mean, there's a few that aren't, that, you know, fall a little flat.
But all of those ads are still with us, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're all still out there on TV.
Yeah,
you only have to watch TV for like an hour or so, and see all of those ads.
Finster and Sons is still my favorite thing I've ever written. Budmilk Horror, I had forgotten how good that was. Although you have to know the Casey Kasem reference to really get it.
It's a pretty, I mean, that's made the rounds even more now.
Yeah. All right, so until next time, go to zombietakeout.com. I'm just going to wrap this up. Check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And if you enjoy the show, spread the word. Give us a little word of mouth. Of course, we appreciate the listeners we have, but more would be better. You'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. Made a slight change because I realized I miscalculated how many more weeks there were in the year. I thought there were 7 more episodes in the year. There are 6, so we had to move Reefer Madness to next year. So the last movie on the list is Reefer Madness after 50 Shades, Class of Nukem High, which will be a beautiful palate cleanser, the 2002 parter, and then we've got Reefer Madness. That's the end of the list, at least in what we have ordered.
I guess we could make it a 2000 trilogy if we went and do Blues Brothers 2000.
We don't want to do that.
No, we don't.
You'll also find the request form if you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review. Please leave it on the request form. And the recommendations list. Was there any doubt? I mean, I didn't know if it was going to get a 5. I was a little nervous. Ever since we reviewed They Live, I've been a little nervous about, you know, revisiting movies I used to love.
That's sad.
But thankfully, this one held up. You can email us zombietakeout@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTO1 or for the alphanumerically challenged.
You can get on with it.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
What an eccentric performance.
Joseph of Arimathea lived in a cave in Britain. I never connected that before.
And wasn't there the language of Aramaic?
Mm-hmm.
It's Arimathea.
Yeah, that was in the Middle East. That's, you know, where Jesus is from, supposedly.
I thought the two were not actually connected.
Oh, they're not. Okay, I don't know. I've heard I know Aramaic is what they spoke, you know, around that time in that area, and Arimathea was a place in that area because I've heard Joseph of Arimathea before.
Yeah.
But I just loved the idea of, you know, him being in a cave in Britain.